Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Well, well, well. It was upset time in New Hampshire and deja vu all over again. Another Clinton became the Granite State's comeback kid. And the McCain Express, which rolled to victory in New Hampshire in 2000, had a comeback of its own. John McCain, back from the near dead of presidential politics, was all youthful smiles.
I'm past the age when I can claim the noun kid, no matter what adjective precedes it. But tonight, we sure showed them what a comeback looks like.
And Hillary Clinton was only too happy to pick up husband Bill's theme from 1992.
I felt like we all spoke from our hearts, and I am so gratified that you responded. Now together, let's give America the kind of comeback that New Hampshire has just given me.
This hour On Point, the polls were wrong. The people have spoken, and this conversation is not over. We'll look at the New Hampshire surprise and the big, messy road ahead in Election 08. We've got a great crew with us today to help look at New Hampshire's results and how they may influence the road ahead in Michigan, South Carolina, Nevada, Florida, and beyond. Joining us from Washington is Gerald Seib, assistant managing editor and executive Washington editor for the Wall Street Journal. He writes the Capital column for the Journal and has been following this race very closely. His upcoming book is Pennsylvania Avenue: Profiles in Backroom Power. Gerald Seib, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
With us from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where the GOP battle really rolls next, is Eleanor Clift, contributing editor for Newsweek magazine. She writes the weekly political column Capital Letter at Newsweek.com. Eleanor, always great to have you. Thanks for being here today.
Glad to be with you.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, who was and is in the thick of the New Hampshire whipsaw. Jack, what do you say today?
I say I and just about everybody else in this chattering class profession was wrong.
Oh, boy. It was all past tense for Hillary Clinton just yesterday.
Oh, those obituaries were all written.
Gerald Seib, what happened here?
I think what you see is the two things that polls can't really measure. One is intensity, and the second is turnout. And the picture that emerges when you look at the exit polls from New Hampshire suggests that women just decided they were going to show up in force and not let Hillary Clinton sink in New Hampshire. There was a big turnout of women. 57% of the New Hampshire Democratic vote was female, and Hillary Clinton won that by 12 points. And what polls can't tell you is which people are actually feeling so strongly about their feelings on any given subject that they'll show up and actually do something about it. And I think what happened yesterday was the people who felt that way about Hillary Clinton showed up and they did something about it, and that's hard to measure.
Eleanor Clift, the day before yesterday, I heard one conservative strategist predict that Hillary Clinton was going to look like Ed Muskie in a pantsuit this morning. Instead, she had her choke-up moment, but she's victorious. How do you read it, Eleanor?
Well, it's the last time that I'm going to get wrapped up in the cable news bubble. Yes, they were trying to decide whether Hillary would lose by under double digits, and then she could keep her candidacy alive. And would she get out of the race before South Carolina? It was really doomsday in there. Even seemed to be a certain amount of glee watching the Clinton dynasty crack. I think what happened is all the publicity around a couple of moments in those final days, the debate where she said her feelings got hurt when people suggested they didn't like her, the tearing up, she suddenly shed the sort of the arrogant cloak of the entitlement campaign and really seemed to turn humble and go to the voters. And I think in her remarks last night, you know, she said that she listened to the voters, and through them she found her voice. So I think it's a remarkable turnaround, particularly on the part of women.
Jack, it's easy and maybe quite right to kick the chattering class this morning, but yet, or today, but yet there were those polls, and the opinion polls, it's supposed to be some kind of science, said, yes, a double-digit lead for Barack Obama. What do you make of all the anticipation of that? Was it glee over anticipating the Clinton dynasty going down, or something else, excitement over Barack Obama rising up?
I think a combination of those, and also just people making up their minds late. And we heard that. I mean, the figure is something like 20% of the people were making up their minds over the last weekend. And also I think that the debate on Saturday night, Obama debated as if he were the front runner. I mean, he was calm, he was cool, he gave good answers, but Hillary put some passion in it. She defended herself. She came right out and named the number of people in New Hampshire, number of children, mm-hmm. National Guard members, who benefited by work she's done for health care. And she showed that she really wanted it and was saying, look, I want it not just for me, but to achieve results like this in the lives of ordinary people. And I think that came through, and you can see it in these exit polls. She got 50% of the vote of people earning between $15,000 and $30,000. She got 44% of those earning up to up to $49,000, and Obama carried comfortably people earning $100,000, but they weren't as numerous in the electorate. And I think that message of hers, I care, I deliver for ordinary people, look what I've already done, and I will do more of it, I think that message got through.
And saying in her victory speech that she found her voice in New Hampshire.
I come tonight with a very, very full heart. And I want especially to thank New Hampshire. Over the last week, I listened to you, and in the process, I found my own voice.
Big cheers last night, and it looks like a new day this morning. Not everybody's buying it. Eleanor Clift, Maureen Dowd, really tough on Hillary Clinton this morning, saying, back off Gloria Steinem with this idea that she had no masculinity to prove. She felt she'd been proving it for years now with Iraq votes and all the rest. And Dowd saying, Eleanor, that her argument against Obama now boils down to an argument against idealism. The people from Hope are arguing against hope. Eleanor, do you hear Hillary having found a voice in New Hampshire that will serve her looking forward?
Maureen Dowd has always been harsh on Hillary Clinton. She's not all that kind to Obama either, calling him old Bambi at times. I think that with Obama, there was always going to be a gut check about whether we really want to turn the country over to somebody with as limited experience that he has. I did a column last week where I talked to Ted Sorensen, who was John F. Kennedy's wordsmith. He's actively campaigning for Obama. It's the first time he's gotten excited about a candidate in 40 years.
I read that, and he was very excited when he spoke with you.
Right. I got a lot of email, and one of the emails said, look, I'm intrigued by Obama. I like him. I like what he has to say. But I think to myself, if I were taking a jet across the ocean, would I want a pilot with as limited experience in his field as Obama has? If I were going under surgery, would I want a doctor with as limited experience? So I think, the voters, I thought that this would happen over the next couple of weeks. I didn't think it would happen in the cycle in New Hampshire. But I do think that Hillary's message, as Jack said, did get through, that she is experienced and that she can use that experience to make change. It's not like she's really the status quo. I mean, I think that was always a phony argument.
Gerald Seib, what about the big gut check on Barack Obama? Again, it's only hours, a day and a half ago, what people were celebrating was exactly the freshness, the newness, the sweet release, maybe, that Obama might represent into, a new age. Is everyone or just enough to give Hillary the margin of victory. Now, gut-checking the way back to machine politics and experience?
Well, I don't know about machine politics, but I agree with Eleanor and experience. You know, one of the things that happens when you get into the position that Barack Obama got into, which is that people see you not as a contender, but maybe the leading candidate, they take a closer look. They re-examine and they ask the questions that the Clinton people had wanted them to ask, which are, as Eleanor suggested, does this person have enough experience? Do I really want to take a chance if it looks like having somebody with less experience is riskier? And some people pull back from that. You know, one of the interesting things, if you look at the exit polls, suggests that the enthusiasm for Obama in New Hampshire was still very high among younger voters, those under age 30. Every age group above the age of 40 went for Hillary Clinton, and in most cases fairly decisively. So you had sort of baby boomers rallying around one of their own, and also people who've seen it a lot, who've been around the block, who might not be quite so taken by a message of change and only change, maybe stepped back a bit and said, well, maybe experience ought to be a factor here. And I think those things are all now in the mix. It's not that they weren't before, but they're probably in a different mix in New Hampshire than they were in Iowa, and probably will be in a different mix in states as we go forward. So it's hard to predict, and I suspect we're all going to get out of the predicting game a little bit for a while.
Here's Barack Obama last night, second place finisher by 3 points, talking about the call for a reality check.
We've been asked to pause for a reality check. We've been warned against offering the people of this nation false hope. But in the unlikely story that is America, there has never been anything false about hope.
Jack Beatty, there it is. Experience, excitement, and we don't know where it's going to land yet. I mean, do you see Obama in any way out of this or still fully in?
Oh, I think he's fully in, and we're going to see that in South Carolina on the 26th. The polls there show him up, and with African Americans comprising about half of the Democratic electorate there, he has to be the odds-on favorite. And according to one thing I've seen, the Culinary Workers Union now in Nevada is about to endorse him. That's 50,000 strong.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking, of course, today about the comebacks in New Hampshire, the Clinton-McCain victories, and where the 08 race is headed. Now, Gerald Seib joins us from Washington. He's executive Washington editor there for the Wall Street Journal, writes the Journal's Capital Journal column. Eleanor Clift is with us from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where the Republican battle really goes next. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Romney and McCain in Michigan. Jack Beatty's here. Right now, James Pinkerton joins us as well from Arlington, Virginia, columnist for Newsday, contributor to the Fox News Channel, worked in the White House under Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Jim Pinkerton, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Here's Mitt Romney last night saying he will fight on.
I will strengthen America as your president. When I come back here next November, I will fight across this nation, on to Michigan and South Carolina and Florida and Nevada and states after that.
And they're whooping it up, but it was a tough loss. Let's hear from listeners and then come to you, Jim Pinkerton. Robert in Davenport, Iowa, you're on the air.
Good morning, Tom. I'm like a delegate for Obama in Davenport, Iowa.
Okay.
And the reason why I was calling is what happened and why she won is the fact that before she was being status quo, I would call it lukewarm Democrat, almost a Republican-like Democrat, talking things that would really appeal to the Democratic part, to the Republican Party. After she seen what Obama was doing, she's now a populist. And she's talking the issues that seems like she read his blueprint.
Are you ready to change your vote, Robert, or are you still with Barack Obama?
There's no way I'm going to change my vote, but I honestly believe if she did get it, I could maybe support her as a candidate a lot more than I could when she was being lukewarm.
Interesting. There's something brewing right there. Let's go to Betsy in Duxbury, Massachusetts. Betsy, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom.
Hi.
The point that I want to make is about the quote-unquote Hillary moment in the cafe.
The little choke-up moment there, yep.
Yeah, and I think that was a turning point for women because I think women really identified, and they saw that here is an empathetic human being, and I've known women that have been saying for weeks or months how great it would be to have a woman running this country to bring the intuition and understanding of how people chick. I
mean, well, why did it take choking up to drive that point home, if it did, Betsy?
Well, just compare the reaction to the way the male commentators generally reacted. They said, oh, this is going to be negative. It was really going to have, it was going to destroy her chances.
Well, some did, some didn't, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I knew that women were going to see somebody who they related to, and, you know, that took care of the concerns, I think, that people had as to whether, you know, she was too cold or not. That showed a warm and empathetic woman. And
a little human moment to bring you over. Does it put you in the Hillary category, Betsy?
I think pretty much. I mean, you know, I'm going to still watch to see how things play out, but, you know, that certainly was my concern. I really respected and thought her experience was very important. I was worried about Obama not having enough experience, but clearly he's charismatic and has a lot to offer. You know, I just think, you know, 8 years from now, he's definitely, you know, would be better prepared.
But that is a different tune from a couple of days ago. What we were hearing certainly out of Iowa, wow, how about it? A near tear and a new day on the Democratic side. James Pinkerton, what about the Republican side? You saw what McCain did there. Of course, he did it before in 2000. You heard Mitt Romney last night. You see where the rest of the field falls here. Rudy Giuliani, just, what, a point ahead of Ron Paul. Where does this leave, Jim, the Republican race?
Well, I think, first of all, we should all say that all pundits have much to be humble about in terms
yes.
of
eat the
results.
Pie.
You know, the Democratic race was a genuine shocker. The buzz yesterday on the Republican side was that, hey, look, watch Romney. You know, he might creep up and beat McCain after all in New Hampshire. So, you know, we're all sort of stuck here kind of puzzling over what happened after the fact. So with that
disclaimer. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Duly noted. It's up in headlines.
Right. It does appear that, you know, that there's a flight to sort of authenticity and sort of reality and so on in terms of the two parties. I mean, for better or worse, you know, the Clintons have been at the heart and soul of the Democratic Party for the last two decades now, and Obama sort of came out of nowhere, and, you know, we'll see what happens, but it certainly is bubble burst in New Hampshire. On the Republican side, you'd have to say that McCain with, you know, running TV spots, reaching back to his days in as a POW in Vietnam, and all his sort of, you know, as he says, more scars than Frankenstein, you'd have to say that he represents something about what Republicans really feel in their bones, especially in wartime. And that's pretty powerful, and I think it was what enabled him to push past Romney in New Hampshire.
Gerald, I want to ask you about that. Here's McCain talking about the pundits and what happened in Nashville, New Hampshire last night.
When the pundits declared us finished, I told them, I'm going to New Hampshire where the voters don't let you make their decision for them. And when they asked, how are you going to do it? You're down in the polls. You don't have the money. I answered, I'm going to New Hampshire, and I'm going to tell people the truth.
Okay, Gerald Seib, he went to New Hampshire. It worked. Does he have the message, the positions, and the money to go the distance, to make it work this time?
You know, good questions. Not a good morning, as Jim indicated, for prognostication.
No.
So I wouldn't go too far down that path. But, you know, you could make a case that the Republican nomination is now McCain's to lose. You know, that doesn't mean he's going to win it. But he's reasonably well positioned in Michigan, which he won before. He is reasonably well positioned in South Carolina. It's going to be hard for Mitt Romney to get off the mat. And then the great question mark lurking out there is Rudy Giuliani and the strategy of basically waiting until Florida. I think the question on the Republican side is when does the field clear? When does it sort of boil down? We're nowhere close to that right now. So you have to be careful in analyzing what this means for John McCain beyond New Hampshire, because New Hampshire has always been a good state for John McCain. It's not an accident he went back there when he sort of became the footnote in the race 6 months ago. It's always been a kind of a state that appreciated the maverick appeal that John McCain has, and that was certainly true yesterday. Whether it carries forward forward or not is harder to say, but he's definitely in a good position and benefiting from the fact that Mitt Romney is not in a good position.
The New York Times saying today, watch out now, these results foreshadow a historic free-for-all down the road. Jack Meade, talk to us about what you perceive as the, I don't know, the music in these outcomes. I mean, just a couple of days ago, it was still the Iowa Symphony, and there was, you know, an awful lot of soaring rhetoric and response to Obama and Huckabee. Now we've got, you know, very different players at the top of the pile. By no means is this over, but what's the shift in tone here, Jack?
Well, I do think there's a reaction against us, against the screen, the herd of independent minds that constitute the modern media machine.
But was Iowa us, quote unquote? I mean, Iowa was voters too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But I think that there was such a magnification that went on after Iowa, perfectly understandable given who Obama was, given his talents, given his race, that there was an understandable reaction against that, and I think that the tableau at the last Democratic debate of Edwards and Obama attacking Hillary, I think that sent its message to women as well, and I think with McCain, I think that process started earlier. I mean, his obituaries were written over the summer, and people in New Hampshire just weren't reading them. And I like that. I really do. I think that, we are a distorting as much as we are a reporting medium, unfortunately. And to me, the remark of the night was Tom Brokaw's when Chris Matthews, who is almost professional Hillary basher, said, Tom, we're going to have to go back and figure out the mythology, I think. Don't you think so? And he said, Brokaw said, you know what I think we're going to have to do? What? Said Matthews. Wait for the voters to make their judgment. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, let's get dry. Let's get serious. Eleanor Clift, it wasn't so dry very recently, though. And it's hard to imagine that all that enthusiasm that, yes, it was out there in the pundits class, but it was also there in Iowa, and you could feel it reflecting back from folks, certainly callers to this program. Is that really gone? How do you see the sort of dry, serious against the, you know, wet, high-toned Obama going forward, Eleanor?
Oh, I think we're in the danger now of over-magnifying the Clinton upset. She won by 3 percentage points in New Hampshire. Obama is going to go on now, and he's the odds-on favorite to win South Carolina. And then it's going to be a shootout on February 5th when all the big states vote. And nobody's even mentioned John Edwards here. I mean, it's hard for me to see how he stays in the race, but he insists he will. And if he doesn't, his votes are going to go somewhere. I mean, does he become a kingmaker in this? I think if you were betting now, you would certainly say that Hillary Clinton has restored her equilibrium and is probably better positioned to win the nomination ultimately than Barack Obama. But I think the fight's far from over. And I don't feel confident in predicting how it comes out.
Well, let's hear from John Edwards. Here he was with his third place finish talking to supporters in New Hampshire, Manchester, last night.
So up until now, about half of 1% of Americans have voted. 99% plus have not voted. And those 99% deserve to have their voices heard because we have had too much in America of people's voices not being heard.
Gerald Saib, how about the prospects for this candidate, and can he be a kingmaker? Could he throw his not inconsiderable report effectively to one or the other of Hillary or Barack?
I have my doubts about any candidate's ability these days to throw support. I think people don't follow when told to do things like that anymore. So I think that's a problematic question. I think the advantage John Edwards has is that he got the race now soon does go to the South, and that was always supposed to be a better place for him for all the obvious reasons. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. You would have thought if there was going to be a John Edwards moment, it would have happened in either Iowa or New Hampshire. It didn't quite, and I'm not sure he can create it now. But I do think it's worth noting here that we are all headed into uncharted waters over the next month. You know, people have talked a lot about how it would be nice if we just had a national primary, one national primary day. Well, you know, we may actually have it on February 5th. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of these races is going to be settled. I'm not even sure it's going to be down to two candidates on either side. And there are going to be 20-plus states that show up to express their views on one day. So this has never really happened before, and I think it's not easy to say how it will turn out.
Jim Pinkerton, Mike Huckabee said very loudly in Iowa, we've proven it's not about the money. John McCain making a similar comment, but Mitt Romney last night making clear he's going to hang in. He's got the money to do that. Of course, February 5th is about big states, big media markets, and maybe big money. Is money really wrung out of this, or could it still be decisive?
I think that Romney, like John Connolly way back when in the 1980 campaign, proves that money doesn't buy you love in politics. I think what happened was, with Huckabee and McCain, is that there's sort of been a sub-primary within the primary, and forgive me here. Mm-hmm. On the one primary, sort of the higher-end Republicans, you know, the suburbanites and so on, and that primary was sort of between McCain and Giuliani, although it doesn't really seem like Giuliani got in the race very much.
Yep.
So McCain is ahead in that one right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other sub-primary for sort of the, you know, the country and western end of the Republican Party, it was sort of Fred Thompson versus, you know, Tom Tancredo versus Huckabee. And Huckabee seems to have won that one, certainly against Tancredo and evidently against Thompson. So there's sort of a two double primary now moving from the playoffs to the finals between those two wings of the Republican Party.
With the twain, I guess, destined to meet or someone just to pull ahead at some point here soon, let's take a call from Linda in Beverly, Massachusetts. Hi, Linda, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, and Happy New Year to your panelists.
Happy New Year to you.
I think that we are all looking forward to a very exciting year.
No kidding.
Those of us who have a passion for politics. And one of the points I wanted to make about Hillary's soft side is that that also could be defined as fatigue. And the campaign is indeed just exhausting. And even Obama made that point very softly and gently that indeed the campaign is exhausting and consequently not being critical of the perhaps almost tears. And, you know, and I will tell you that I think the campaign, for those of us passionate about politics, really demands critical thinking. You know, that we can actually hold two opposing views in our mind and work them through.
Is critical thinking leaning you toward Hillary Clinton today, Linda, or and her kind of I will get down in the trenches and get it done, or leaning you toward the soaring kind of imagery and inspiration of Obama?
Obama, because what keeps being said is he has no experience. And most presidents who come in, it is a learning on the job. I want a quick mind. And I think a lot of people have forgotten the way the Clintons entered that White House and just how disorganized their entry was. And consequently, you know, and yet I think Clinton ended up being an excellent president in so many ways. And when he said it's the economy, stupid, it is always the economy, stupid. So that even now, the economy, I really personally believe we are headed to a recession. And I would like to hear your panelists' point of views or responses to, you know, what my point of views are.
We've got it, Linda, and we'll get it right now. Let me get it just a second before the break here. Gerald Saab, you're with the Wall Street Journal. Even the president's talking about economic trouble ahead right now. If it continues to grow and rocks the national economy a bit more here, where does that play? Definitely into Democrat hands or something more complicated?
Most likely into Democrat hands, but not necessarily. You know, the markets certainly acted yesterday like they think we're headed for a recession. I think there's a reasonably good chance this campaign in the general election phase could be played out amidst a recession. That will change the debate, and it's going to raise the profile of the economy. Already, I think the economy has overshadowed Iraq, and who would have guessed that 6 months ago? So, yes, absolutely. Now, whether that's an advantage Democrat or an advantage Republican obviously depends on who the nominees are and how they handle it. But I do think that the caller is right. There is an economic issue that's big and getting bigger.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the big comebacks in New Hampshire. This conversation is not over in either party. Nothing could be more clear than that, at least. Gerald Seib is with us. He writes the Capital Journal column for the Wall Street Journal. His new book coming out soon, Pennsylvania Avenue. Eleanor Clift is here. Hers is Capital Letter for Newsweek.com, contributing editor there. James Pinkerton joins us from Newsday. He worked in the White House under Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. And Jack Beatty is here. Let's hear from these candidates. Here's Obama last night in his concession speech, not giving up on the new day dawning theme.
There's something happening when Americans who are young in age and in spirit, who've never participated in politics before, turn out in numbers we have never seen because they know in their hearts that this time must be different.
Hillary Clinton in victory, saying politics is not a game.
For all the ups and downs of this campaign, you helped remind everyone that politics isn't a game. This campaign is about people, about making a difference in your lives.
John McCain, the POW warrior, talking about a time of war and the tough face of politics and this era.
In a time of war and the terrible sacrifices it entails, the promise of a better future is not always clear. But I promise you, my friends, we face no enemy, no matter how cruel, and no challenge, no matter how daunting, greater than the courage, patriotism, and determination of Americans. We are the makers of history, not its victims.
Let's talk about each of these parties trying to sort out the choices in front of them. Jim Pinkerton, first to you on John McCain. How does the GOP, as this rolls forward in Michigan and on, how does it sort out its ambivalence about John McCain in different wings of the party, despite the strong vote he had in New Hampshire last night?
Well, I think that what you heard there was a good indicator of where McCain's support comes from, a patriotic war hero candidacy. On the other hand, what McCain didn't mention in that soundbite or in his victory statement last night was the word immigration, which I think is probably the hottest issue inside the Republican primary.
Half Republicans surveyed at the polls said illegal in New Hampshire said illegal immigrants should be deported.
Well, okay, there you are. And McCain is winning based on his enormous stockpile of credibility and honor. But there's a whole other sphere of concern about immigration and illegals and crime and everything else that McCain is basically sort of ignored. He was, of course, famously on the wrong side of the immigration debate with the McCain-Kennedy bill on immigration last spring that was defeated in the Senate. So I think it's just a question now of whether Romney or Huckabee or whoever can make the argument that, look, McCain will give you the rhetoric you want for, you know, the Middle East and so on, but back here in the Midwest, it's a different story.
Gerald Seib, how do you see the GOP wrestling this through? You know, not exactly thrilled about its field of candidates. Can it come together, come to terms with John McCain broadly?
You know, I think broadly it could. That doesn't mean it will. And there are always going to be problems for John McCain. You know, he is a suspect by the Christian conservative wing of the party, not disliked, but suspect. As Jim said, he's got a problem with immigration. There's also a problem on the economic wing of the party. They don't believe John McCain is a true believer in tax cuts. You know, he voted against the George W. Bush tax cuts initially in 2001, and he says that was because there wasn't an adequate amount of spending reduction to go along with the tax cuts, mm-hmm. and that's a plausible explanation. But it doesn't go well with the economic conservative wing of the party either. So, you know, the McCain appeal continues to be towards slightly more independent-minded Republicans and a little less amongst some of the core constituencies of the party. And we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, that's going to be a lingering problem for him.
Let's see if we can get a call from New Hampshire, where it all came down. Gina in Kingston, New Hampshire. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I just need to make a few comments from what I saw yesterday. I was glued to the whole race. What I saw was very kind of, I went back to work at 4 o'clock and I came back and Hillary won, and that to me was very surprising. Mm. You know, when I think of Hillary as a Democratic candidate, I look at it objectively, and we do look at the history of the candidates in New Hampshire with an independent mind. You know, when I look at Hillary and her past, you know, some of it speaks to her moral character. Now, we're talking about somebody who has said, it's okay, I'll stick by my husband even though he cheats on me, you know. And further than that, for a Democrat, you know, it's all about the rhetoric of the people and change. But when you really look at her, she's living in her big apartment on Park Avenue, you know. When I see folks in New Hampshire...
Well, she lived in the White House, too, but they got elected to live there. What are they supposed to do?
I take
your point. What have you got, Gina?
Well, what I'm thinking is that, you know, folks in New Hampshire are having trouble paying the heating bill. And for a Democratic choice, I'm very surprised that Hillary came out like she did.
Where was your vote, Gina? Are you GOP or Democrat, and for whom?
I actually am an independent. I registered as Republican yesterday to vote for John McCain. Because the reason that I think independent thinkers is they look at the broad range of candidates and all the rhetoric that is simply the same throughout all the races. You have to look at which candidates in this race are not running for self-seeking reasons. Now, clearly, if you look at perhaps Obama or Hillary or even Romney, you know, are they doing it really for the people? Are they doing it really for the greater good? Or are they doing it for some kind of reason that may satisfy a self-seeking reason?
Well, but that's pretty tough to sort out, isn't it? I mean, we all get down deep in our human souls. There's ambition in every heart, though John McCain says it's all about the nation. But, Gina, we hear you raising the questions there on Hillary and her motivations, her background. Eleanor Clift, do you think this will settle in to the hope versus ready to lead dynamic that we've kind of seen so far? And if it does, which looks like the more attractive theme in 2008 to you?
You know, I think the voters want to be both inspired and they want to be confident that somebody can do the job. And I think it's been a balancing act on the part of the candidates. I mean, Obama is trying to tell people he is experienced. He just brings a different kind of experience. And Hillary is, trying now to relate more to voters so that they can get excited about her candidacy. You know, I think that Democrats like both these candidates, and it's not as though it's a rejection of one or the other. I think they're just trying to figure out who is the best person for the times we live in. And if you define the presidency as a managerial position, I think Hillary Clinton would certainly be the one most qualified. If you're more interested in somebody who can rally the country and perhaps, you know, break the logjam on Capitol Hill that way, then Barack Obama would be your candidate.
And Hillary Clinton more qualified because she was first lady in the White House, first lady in Arkansas, and a senator for a few more years than Obama?
She's been a policymaker and a public policy advocate for her entire adult life. She has seen state government up close in Arkansas 12 years as first lady. She was in the White House not simply as an ornament. She did work the levers of power there from her position. She wasn't a co-president. I don't think there is such a thing, but she certainly, you know, was in a position to see how it works and to learn from it. And she's been a senator in her own right now for, you know, 8 years. I mean, I think that is more experience than a community organizer and somebody in a state senate. And she's got, you know, 15 years in age over Barack Obama. But again, I think it depends what people are looking for in the next president and who they feel most confident. I think right now, I think people are still deciding. It looks like Hillary's gotten an edge here for the moment, but after Barack Obama wins South Carolina, we'll be talking about him back in the mix. And as Tom Brokaw said, you quoted him earlier, we'll have to let the voters decide on February 5th.
I guess we will, but oops, there comes another prediction. Who knows? Let's talk about the other Clinton for just a moment. Here's Bill Clinton yesterday in New Hampshire, just going after Barack Obama, the Barack Obama fairy tale.
It is wrong that Senator Obama got to go through 15 debates trumpeting his superior judgment and how he had been against the war in every year, enumerating the years, and never got asked one time, not once. Well, how could you say that when you said in 2004 you didn't know how you would have voted on the resolution? You said in 2004 there was no difference between you and George Bush on the war, and you took that speech you're now running on off your website in 2004, and there's no difference in your voting record and Hillary's ever since. give me a break. This whole thing is the biggest fairy tale I've ever seen.
Bill Clinton throwing some punches. Jack Beatty, a fairy tale? And do you expect to see more or less of the former President Clinton upcoming?
Well, the conventional wisdom seemed to be that he was hurting the campaign with outbursts like that, and with a later outburst against the New Hampshire primary itself for having been pushed up so early. But doesn't seem to have hurt Hillary any. And of course, the knock on Obama, nothing can efface the fact that in 2002, when Hillary was making a speech to endorse, essentially to give the president authority to go to war in Iraq, at that same time, Barack Obama was lucidly predicting the future, that this was a stupid war for the wrong reasons in the wrong place against the wrong enemy, that it would lead to an endless occupation, a waste of blood and treasure, distracting us from the war on terror. That is judgment. He had it there, and she did not. And nothing Bill says about what he said subsequently can take that away. Tom, if I can just make one point about this primary. Rudy Giuliani, CBS has calculated that, in fact, he's claiming he didn't campaign much up here. In fact, CBS has found that he campaigned, even made more appearances even than John McCain, made more appearances than even the Democratic candidates.
Rudy Giuliani, more than John McCain?
Yes, over the whole period. Spent more money, lots and lots of money, and he struck out, and with him, fear struck out. He the ads he was running at the end in Florida, but also a certain extent up here, were really just fear ads, blending images of Pakistan and Bhutto's assassination and referring to a people perverted. What people? The Muslim people? The Pakistani people? Just total fear. And I think it is he was rejected up here on that, and I think that, to me, that's very, very encouraging.
James Pinkerton, how about Rudy Giuliani with his 9-point showing in New Hampshire and the way ahead? Still a hope for his Super Tuesday strategy, or do you see fear rejected and the GOP not going down that road?
Well, I see skipping Iowa as a big rejection, and Jack's facts about Giuliani's presence in New Hampshire are kind of well taken. I think that's certainly interesting. I hadn't really thought about that. I will say that, again, Giuliani and McCain were competing for the same sort of higher-end vote, more foreign policy-oriented, and it looks like McCain has won pretty decisively. The political scientists of the future will marvel at the Giuliani campaign's thinking that said that they could wait back and put the real hopes on Florida, which is, you know, votes at the end of the month, even as, you know, sort of, you know, relatively obscure candidates like Huckabee or Edwards were reaping, you know, millions and millions of dollars a day in free publicity just by the act of, you know, eating a pecan pie in Dubuque, Iowa.
Speaking of the devil, here's one more guy.
We thought that if we could finish in the top, we kept saying 4 or 5, we'd feel pretty good about that, knowing just how tough it's been to try to break through. But tonight, you've given us so much more than we could have imagined just a few days or weeks ago.
Mike Huckabee making the most of his third-place finish, or trying to, in New Hampshire last night. Gerald Seib, what about Huckabee, and what about Giuliani? I mean, we were all surprised yesterday in New Hampshire. Could there be a Giuliani surprise in Florida?
Well, first on Huckabee. I mean, I sort of have this image of Mike Huckabee kind of waving at New Hampshire as he moves on to Michigan and South Carolina. I mean, it was never going to be a great state for him. It certainly wasn't a great state for him yesterday. Michigan's a different story, has a significant evangelical component in the population there, and as does South Carolina. And so it was pretty clear after Iowa that the Huckabee moment was going to be extended, if it was going to be extended at all, not in New Hampshire, but in either Michigan or South Carolina or both. You know, I think Giuliani is the great mystery. I mean, I share the skepticism that this idea that you can be a footnote until Florida and then take off is going to work. But, you know, we've seen a lot of strange things this year. I agree that New Hampshire was not a great a night for him either. It's not clear that it matters, and maybe this is such a strange year that all the conventional rules for the campaign cycle have been broken, and we're off to some different land.
Mm. Eleanor Cliff, you're in Grand Rapids in Michigan. The Republicans paying a lot of attention there very soon. What can you tell here now a week out about Michigan's leanings?
Well, watching the local news, John McCain was touching down at the Gerald R. Ford International Airport in Grand Rapids this morning, and Mitt Romney is expected here this afternoon. It's the contest between the two of them. Romney is a golden name in the state. This is where his father was governor, and so he's really running on his family recognition and familiarity. But John McCain won this state in 2000. It's what they call an open primary. Independents can come in. Democrats can decide they want to vote. And the Democrats really aren't contesting here because the state moved up its primary up outside the rules of the national committee. And so the Democrats actually signed a pledge that they wouldn't campaign here. So it's really about the Republicans. And it's a question whether Romney can somehow recover enough to look more credible going into the bigger states next month, and whether John McCain can truly keep the momentum he rediscovered in New Hampshire, whether he can keep that going.
Jim Pinkerton, we've got 20 seconds here. How long can Mitt Romney's silver medals and, you know, pile of personal silver fortune keep him in this race?
Put your finger on it there with a pile of silver.
Yeah.
Look, it's just a question of how much money he's willing to spend. You know, if you have as much money as he does, I mean, look at Bloomberg, look at Perot. You're a player until the very end, if you write checks.
So far, the checks have been written, but the gold is still elusive. James Pinkerton, columnist at Newsday, thank you very much for being with us today, Jim.
Thank you.
Gerald Seib at the Wall Street Journal, Pennsylvania Avenue, his new book coming up soon. Look for it. Gerald, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Eleanor Clifton, Grand Rapids, Michigan, with Newsweek magazine. Always great to have you, Eleanor.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, what a year this is going to be. My goodness, we're just getting started, it turns out.
The roller coaster is on.
It's on, and we're in it. Jack, thanks for being with us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.